Dateline Deadline.com. Writer and director Alice Kurtzman says The Mummy is probably the biggest failure of my life, both personally and professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, don't sell yourself short. You got a lot of failures.
Well, this is the one he recognizes.
And you're so young, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, do we really want to do a looking back on my life?
I love the fact that he has him and Sidney Lumet's kid, who were just accepted. Okay, congratulations. You're a producer, writer, and showrunner now. He's got a big Showtime show. I don't know how big it is. It's a genre thing, but it's out. And he's doing the interview rounds. What are they asking him about? The Mummy. But probably his greatest skill is to pretend that everything is going great, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is a skill for a showrunner, for a executive, front-facing, you know, producer, right?
Yeah, sure.
Is to pretend that it's all great.
Mm-hmm.
How great is this? So great. How shitty is this? So great. Like, that's job, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of self-delusion. So he is just kicking ass, I guess.
Yeah.
And now that Showtime's Man Who Fell to Earth series is getting good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes,
uh-huh,
Metacritic, not so much, but we all know how it's weighted.
Yeah.
We'll never be rid of this guy.
No.
We will never, ever be rid of this guy. Mm-mm. He's going to be here forever.
Yeah.
Even though I can't imagine, you and I both saw an exclusive clip of preview of that show.
Yes, we did.
And it resembles in no way at all the film which it's based on.
No.
A strange and unique film.
Uh-huh.
A film what can you say? What happens in The Man Who Fell to Earth? What is it?
To be completely honest, I don't remember the film all that well. I know he's an alien who comes to Earth.
Yeah, that's what happens to
blend in.
What's it about?
I don't remember, to be completely honest.
It's about a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's about a lot of things.
It was kind of a mess.
But here's what makes it special.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to put him first. Bernie Casey.
Okay.
First of all. But David Bowie.
For sure.
And a mountain of cocaine.
Uh-huh.
And the songs that he wrote for it that were kind of supposed to be in the movie but then didn't, and then turned out they ended up in Station to Station, or what was...
I'm not sure.
Can't remember which album was the Man Who Fell to Earth album.
But yeah.
And it is a weird movie that is about a million different things and could only be made with that person at that time. Also, you know, it is based on a Walter Tevis novel, right? The guy that made Queen's Gambit. The success of Queen's Gambit is why there is a Showtime series.
Sure.
It has nothing to do with trying to honor or continue to tell the story of his character, David Bowie's character.
No, I don't think so.
No.
No.
Walter Tevis, skilled. And we're talking about Tom Cruise. Hustler and Color of Money were his too. So this guy, you know, he made a lot of books that got turned into screenplays.
Okay. anyway. I don't think I've seen Hustler or Color of Money. Should I add those to my list?
Hustler for sure.
Okay.
Just go listen to Werewolves of London a couple times on repeat and you'll have Color of Money down.
got it.
But so, and we've seen this show and it's like, what is life about? And what is the universe? You know, you can find the future too. If you believe in yourself. What? No, he drinks a lot of water and he bangs chicks.
Right.
And does drugs.
Yeah.
Water is like his drugs.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it's a Ziggy Stardust kind of thing. He's sort of consumed by his own failings and by the idea of fame.
Yeah.
Which is definitely going to happen to the character in this thing who looks like he's going to become Steve Jobs or something, like Black Steve Jobs.
I have no idea. It does look like he's working for a tech company. Like, I'm going to blow these humans' minds.
That's what it's about.
No,
that's what it's supposed to be about, isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think it was a weird 70s sci-fi drug trip. Like, I mean, that's what it was, right?
Right.
So this resembles that in no way.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot Nick Rogue, too. Nick Rogue directed it, you know? So just like a moment in time. A moment in time, something special. Yeah. One more special thing that Alex Kurtzman has put in his mouth, chewed 100 times on both sides, swallowed, shat out, and then filmed.
Right.
And then given to you.
Yeah.
This is fun. I like that I can complain about this.
Well, you can complain about anything, right? Yeah,
on
right.
On this show, I can.
You can't complain about it on Enterprising Individuals. Or, well... I mean, I feel like you do complain a little bit on backtracking.
Well, thank you. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, one day. One day all will be one. Yeah. And until then, you've got the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mikan Hanna.
And we're talking about Alex Kurtzman. It's the Alex Kurtzman criticism show now. Mm-hmm. Star Trek movies, Transformers. I don't know. I think people would probably go to bat for Xena, Warrior Princess, but nobody could call it good TV, though, right?
Some people might. Some people might. I don't know. But it's... I mean, it's like kind of like good, bad TV.
Sam Raimi was involved in that in some way, right? He was like the...
I have no idea.
Probably the overreaching like executive producer.
Maybe.
I don't think anything went through him, though.
Yeah. I have no idea who was behind those shows.
Me either. You know who was behind my frustration today?
Who?
The people who stomp up and down continually above this, our studio, which will no longer be our studio. The next time you hear us, we'll be in our brand new studio.
Yes.
And I, Tiger Trap would then go into our space, wouldn't it? You have to dig down.
Yeah,
so what about just piano wire? Piano wire across the furniture legs.
Wow.
If we get any stompers in the next area that we're in, you're going to hear one big stomp.
Oh, no.
6 feet of stomp, and that'll be the end of that.
Okay. All right. I mean, I understand the sentiment, and I appreciate it, because here's the thing. Like, you explain it to somebody else, and, oh, it's funny, and, oh, it's kind of a weird and funny thing that we're experiencing it, but I challenge any of you to freaking live with it. It's not funny, and it's not cute.
No.
And it's very irritating.
And it's especially frustrating when you are making content.
It is.
You know, it's one thing to go from, you know, our last kind of situation, our studio situation was an underground room with no windows.
It got very hot so you would in get, the warmer months.
Heat stroke. Yeah. You can't hear heat stroke.
No.
But you can't hear anything else because amazing recording setup. Our current studio, not so great. The next one looking to be better.
Yeah.
And so we'll we'll test that and then we'll find out that they're training elephants in the suite above us.
Yeah.
But we'll cross that bridge when we burn it.
Yes.
But until then, we have a show to do tonight. And that show is, of course, the end of the month, our patron show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, April 30th. Yeah, we'll just miss it by one. So this is the last show of the month.
Yes.
And for that reason, we're talking about the result of our patron poll. Of course, you've heard April Showers.
Mm-hmm. Thought, I have.
What if we provided a poll, a choice between two weather-titled films?
Yes.
One of those being 1988's Rain Man, which I think speaks for itself.
Yes.
And 1997's The Ice Storm.
Mm-hmm.
And the patrons unanimously chose Rain Man.
Yes.
And not the Rain Man.
No.
Not the Rainmaker.
No. Just Rain Man.
And we'll be talking about Rain Man on the show today.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'd never seen it before. So
good.
And it was actually on my list. So we're crossing one off of my list too.
Yes. This list... the Extraordinary Playlist.
Yes.
Which, speaking of Patreon and patrons, it's been a little while actually because of moving and stuff like that. But we have a couple shows in the tank, and we release at least twice a month a show where we talk about one of these movies on Mika's Extraordinary Playlist.
Yes.
I would call them generally classic films, sometimes just something that got pulled out of the ether, but always something interesting.
Well, thank you. I think you're being very generous.
Well, you're not doing like a John, like a middle to late period John Cusack romance movie, you know?
No.
Serendipity or a Must Love Dogs.
Sadly, I've seen both of those.
Oh my God.
And neither of them are
What about America's
good.
Sweethearts?
I don't know if I've seen that.
Oh, no turkey. All right.
Yeah.
But anyway, won't be stuff like that.
No.
Someday I'll do a rom-com podcast. It ain't gonna be today.
Yeah, really? Today you're promising a rom-com?
Sure. Come on, that would people would listen to that.
I don't think that they're.
What's the angle though?
I gotta be honest with you. I don't like a lot of romantic comedies.
No, it's not about liking.
Yeah.
In fact, this is the first movie that we've watched for a patron poll that I would consider a good movie.
Oh, really?
A good movie. Look at that.
And including In the Name of the Father, you didn't think that that was a good movie?
That was okay.
Okay.
That was all right. And if you want our review of that, of course, just go back last month.
Mm-hmm.
But this month we're talking about Rain Man, and we'll be talking about that after the news. All right, well, let's start with the bad stuff.
Okay.
I guess let's talk about what's going on in the world of Netflix.
All right.
You know, I feel detached from Netflix because I guess I am part of some of the stats that I'm about to read.
Yep.
But I have not been a Netflix subscriber for a while. Whether that fits into their most recent quarter, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is that Netflix, this last Wednesday, dropped by a third in value. Their shares fell 37% to $220 per share.
Mm-hmm.
Their worst day in 18 years, which has got to be near to the beginning of the company.
Yeah, I would think so. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's definitely very significant, I would say.
Yes. One of those reasons is, and I am unable to find the specific numbers here, but they went negative on subscribers.
Uh-huh.
For the first time in 10 years.
How do you go negative on subscribers? You people, don't add any?
People drop out.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Actually, I do have the numbers. I lied. Let's see. 20. So in the last 10, like I said, the last 10 they lost subscribers was Q3. That's quarter three.
Right.
Of 2011. Don't know what was going on then.
That was a long time ago.
But yeah, it was a while ago. And they rose essentially unbrokenly with some variation, peaking in the first quarter of 2020. So beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
They added over 15 million subscribers.
Okay.
Then they did less the next quarter, much less, bounced back up. You know how it is.
Yes.
But now in Q1 of 2022, they went down a few hundred thousand, and then they went down about 1 million in Q2.
Wow.
So they are now... what's a hemorrhage exactly? They are leaking subscribers. Yeah. I don't know if they're hemorrhaging.
Yeah, they're losing quite a few subscribers at a pretty rapid rate.
I don't want to blame it all on Dave Chappelle, but it probably didn't help.
I don't think it helped. I don't think it helped. I know that's why we left. Just also how Netflix handled that. You know, like I know that they had a deal with Chappelle and everything, and they want to keep him happy, but I just feel like they did not handle that well. Yeah.
So how much do they owe Dave Chappelle?
Mm-hmm.
And how much would they have gotten from 1 million new subscribers?
Right. Right. And then just also, like, I don't know. There's
the first one was lower.
Yeah, exactly. Lower. Exactly. Yeah. And they don't think of it in terms of that, or they thought, like, oh, this won't affect us.
Yeah. So, dick-ass shithead Elon Musk had some comments to make about it, but who gives a rat's ass what he thinks?
Yeah.
Real people who are good with money think that this is, you know, a problem in just the growth model of Netflix, which is to say the eternal, unflinching, we have to grow forever model.
Right.
Which at this point, I think we found the limit. You know, after 10 years, everybody who has a Netflix account has one.
Mm-hmm.
And until their children get credit cards, you know, and get off their parents' Netflix,
mm-hmm.
Which they're trying to do because they're trying to cut down on people and their sharing passwords, which would not contribute to their loss of customers, right?
No, but they're trying.
All you're doing is if you kick people off, uh-huh. Maybe if you're mad that Netflix yelled at you for letting your brother use your Netflix and then you quit Netflix over that. But otherwise, the fact that like a month ago, they made a big deal about like, you know, trying to get people off. It seems like they knew that this was coming. They knew that the numbers weren't going to hit. Yeah. But that's not great. The idea that they, you know, just can't grow forever. Well, it is capitalism, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they are going to need to find some new level of stasis, I think, you mm-hmm. know, and be happy with what they've got. This, of course, has reverberated through the content that they've been creating. and they have canceled things left and right.
It's that's the upsetting thing. Yeah, right.
And so the fat is getting cut left and right. They have basically nuked their animation division.
Which is, I think, too bad, honestly.
Which, couldn't you nuke your live action anime division?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So basically they have laid off a lot of executives and I'm sure people under them. One major major casualty was the upcoming adaptation of Bone, the comic book Bone.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Which has been a comic for like 30 years. Mm-hmm. And in all this time has never really had an animation, not an official one.
Right.
Partially because Jeff Smith, the creator of Bone, has been very particular about it. And it's like, hey, Jeff, you want the money or not? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because you put your faith in Netflix, a company that just was just told that they had spent too much money. And they're like, oh, okay, don't return Jeff Smith's calls.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. I don't know how to help you, Jeff. I know that Jeff's Bone is very good and he is a very meticulous creator. And so I can understand him saying no until the time that he felt like he had an amount of control.
Mm-hmm.
But you're an artist and they're a company.
Yeah.
And they're never going to care about the things that you care about.
Right.
And so it was a great deal until it wasn't.
Right.
And so anyway, that's out. Anything else? I'm kind of flipping through a Yahoo Entertainment story here. But mm-hmm. Anything that you like that you think was on the bubble, probably not coming back. So I don't know if the Masters of the Universe 2 is second season is finished. It's probably not coming back.
Right.
Everything's not coming back. We're cutting the fat.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah. I wonder if they'll lose more customers over this in some ways.
Here's some more blood and guts from this story.
Oh, boy.
Billionaire hedge fund manager Bill Ackman, in response to this news, liquidated his entire stake in Netflix and took a $400 million loss to get out of Netflix.
Jeez, that seems like a lot of money.
So This is after the Q1 sort of misfire. He just hit the eject button. And so when this billionaire hedge fund guy jumps out of the plane and leaves $400 million behind, that's...
I think that
sends a message.
There's blood in the water.
I think a lot of, minor, small investors I probably went, okay, fine.
right. And I don't think that helped either. It's too
meanwhile,
bad, but
Mickey Mouse is a bit more like
what are the softly rubbing his gloved hands together,
licking his lips,
gross. Like,
but where he goes,
your
tongue flips around like in a cartoon,
right?
Yeah,
is Disney Plus Netflix's biggest competition?
Well, everybody's going after Netflix, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Mean, they're not going after blockbuster streaming online.
Do you think that Netflix is? Do you think this is the beginning of the end for them? Do you think that
No. I mean, look, they still have millions and millions and millions of subscribers. I think that they need to just, and this is tough because this is not how businesses, especially high profile, big money, publicly traded businesses, go. They just can't expect to continue to grow for 15 years straight. It's just not how anything really works.
Well, maybe they
don't look
be...
for Bright 2 anytime soon.
No. Maybe they should be pickier about like the type of things they produce and everything, too.
No.
I mean, honestly, I think
don't
that
look for Shadow and Bone 2 anytime soon.
Yeah, well.
Oh, is Bridgerton on Netflix?
It is.
Uh-oh. Maybe we're not going to get all 7 seasons of Bridgerton.
Bridgerton's pretty popular.
We hit her where she lives.
Yeah, well.
Somehow watching Bridgerton. No Netflix, as she confessed. Interesting. Any other Netflix related stories? definitely not working with Will Smith in the future, either because of the slap or because, they just don't want to pay for a Bright 2. here's something funny, though. It looks like they're going to double down on their game business.
I don't understand.
Everything looks great. This is like, that was, what was Bill Ackerberg or something? Now if when Schmill Schmackerberg hears that, he's like,
psh, yeah, right.
Another $400 million down. Because I'll tell you right now, nobody wants this. No one wants this.
I don't know why they're doing it.
Nobody wants this.
No.
Google couldn't make streaming games work.
Yeah.
Now, what are we talking about? You're a streaming company, so I assume that you mean like a streaming experience like Google Stadia or PS Now or whatever. PS Now is a failure. Nobody wants PS Now. In fact, Sony just reorganized the tiers to try to like trick people into paying more for PS Now.
Oh, wow.
They're also adding like more first party new releases. Xbox Game Pass is not streaming. You pay, you know, a fee monthly
yes.
to download the game to your computer and play it.
Right.
But Netflix wants to do a streaming game thing, and they are jettisoning their Bone Show, which probably would have been very successful, and
yes.
everything else that they're doing, Cowboy Bebop second season or whatever, just to do games, which no, you don't want a Netflix controller attached to your Netflix
no.
box or
Why
whatever.
Why would you want that?
Yeah, well, they're reinvesting in that.
I think that that's a dumb move on their part, and I think mm-hmm. they're going to end up losing money as far as that goes.
Agree. I so. Agree.
Would have nixed that instead of Bones. Just
let's,
saying.
Yeah, or Bone. Yeah.
Or Bone, whatever.
Sorry. Yeah, but the Bones video game.
They're trying to solve this mystery.
Is that is the Buffy guy? Is he okay?
I have no idea why.
Did you hear bad stuff about him?
I don't know. Was it him?
Was
or was it
him
somebody more? Else from Buffy?
Oh, no, the one guy from Buffy. Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Gosh.
He was sued for sexual harassment by a coworker on the set of Bones. The lawsuit against him was dismissed following the matter being resolved. Whatever that means.
Okay. No, I did not
According
know
to
that.
CBS News. Who owns Bones, the show?
It's CBS, isn't it?
Interesting. 20th Century Fox Television.
Oh,
okay.
It's Fox.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Who shows the reruns?
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's talk about video games still. Did you know that Ubisoft is, and we've talked about this before, we've speculated, but now it's been confirmed that private equity firms are circling Ubisoft as the next big acquisition.
Oh, great. I don't know how I feel about that.
They're really like, when I think of, you know, you used to think about like the six major Hollywood studios
mm-hmm.
and how we're down to like basically four or like three and a half because mm-hmm. of consolidation, acquisition, so on and so forth. Video game companies are like that too. And we're basically down to like a handful of original studios or, you know, they are them in their own way conglomerates, you know,
mm-hmm.
but because Ubisoft has a bunch of different studios that sort of work for them. But they haven't been bought up by Microsoft or Sony or anybody like that yet, but they're getting there. They're counting their dollars.
Mm-hmm.
How much money we got here
right.
at this private equity firm?
Right.
You want to own part of a video game company we can run into the ground? How could you run Assassin's Creed more into the ground than you already have? Other than
they made
that bad movie. Have Alex Kurtzman direct. the reboot of the
right.
Alex Kurtzman or the Alex Kurtzman Creed. Alex, we got it. We got our title. Kurtzman Creed.
You could do an Assassin's Creed live action TV show.
That actually would slap.
You think
that?
So?
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be real low budget. Speaking of Xena, Warrior Princess, or
sure.
Jack of All Trades, you know, you'd have mm-hmm. to really... Doctor Who does it. 10 times a year, right? They make,
yeah,
they go to Venice every once in a while, you know,
sure.
they can afford to, and they make it look good, but you'd have
yeah.
to, you have to make it look really good.
Yeah.
That's what the volume's for.
Yeah, right.
Now that the volume has me paranoid.
Why? Oh my gosh.
Volume's got me paranoid, man.
All right.
Because when I watch a show now, I don't know if it's real or not.
Yeah. Why does that make you paranoid, though?
I don't know. I like to know, like, where they are. Like, you see, we watch a lot of fantastical shows. We watch,
yeah.
watch a lot of things like that. And there's, I know that there is trickery involved, but I don't know how
yeah.
much. Sometimes you'll watch a show like the most recent episode of Star Trek Picard,
uh-huh.
produced by Alex Kurtzman and co-created by Alex Kurtzman.
Yeah.
And it's clear that, like, well, the entire season is being filmed. They're time traveling to L.A., so we don't have to pay for any sets.
Yeah, right.
Or any real location shoots outside of, outside city streets.
Yes.
But then you get an episode where it's like, it all takes place in an interrogation room, a parking lot in L.A., and like a house somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you guys are out of money. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
But then you watch the Halo show, and he's running around. He's driving a car that can't exist. There's aliens jumping on it, and he's, you know, and his armored butt is like shooting lasers at them, and you're like, what's real? How much of this is real?
Honestly, it doesn't bother me.
Obi-Wan Kenobi is creepily looking through some
well, that bothers monoculars. Me for a different reason.
Young not, Luke.
Not because...
None of them are there. It's all fake.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me because I'm like, is it real or not?
Hello there.
Yeah. It's just, it's weird.
Time to get into my sand van.
We've made it a weird thing, having an old man look out. He's supposed to be like, kind of like, you know, making sure he's okay from afar. But like you said, like they... You know, off air, you were breaking it down. Like he's looking at binoculars at young Luke. That's a weird, creepy man thing. You know, we don't have a park bench and he's playing on the playground.
What are we gonna do?
So instead, binoculars right. from a sand dune.
Right. And it's really, isn't it a waste to lock Ewan McGregor into children's entertainment? Because he can't get his wang out. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah, I know.
Another fine addition to my collection.
Oh, my gosh.
What are we doing the Jimmy Smith show? If you're telling me...
I don't know.
Because I thought, look, I get it. He's assigned to basically watch over Luke. He's kind of Luke's godfather, but he has to remain distant. So he changes only his first name. Maybe Kenobi's like Johnson in their galaxy.
Who knows?
And so he has to be hanging around, but he's not going to just sit and watch him through binoculars for like 15 years, right?
No.
I just assume that like he continued to have like Jedi adventures, but because the Jedi are now outlawed, it's a secret kind of thing.
And he had to be
so
really...
So he's that guy that shows up and they're like, yeah, there's no more Jedi. And then it's like, hello there. And you're like, oh, okay. And then he's going to get into all kinds of scrapes. It's going to
be
a lot of...
Be more
it's going
interesting.
To Toshiro Mifune type situations where he's coming into town and he's helping out. And sure, we know at some point he will have to save Luke and look 30 years older, even though he's only 15 years older or whatever.
Right.
It's hard living in the desert.
Yeah, right.
Or he'll have to duck out every once in a while and go, ooh, I got to go look at Luke creepily through binoculars.
Yeah,
and
right.
Just run off and do that. But no, instead, it's just like, he's just going to hang around. So if he's just going to hang around, then where's the Jimmy Smith show, which is the opposite number, where he just like, I guess he doesn't, she's literally sitting on his lap and he's looking at her through binoculars. she seems okay. Where he raises Princess Leia as his daughter.
Yeah, right. No, that would be interesting. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Like, Jimmy Smith, there must be a mom, Organa, right?
Yeah.
Or not. No, I mean, I think he's a widower because... She remembers her mother. She was very beautiful, very sad. And there's no other mother that she's remembering. So, but she could have like a stepmom or a governess. Got it. We got a governess.
Wait.
So we have I've just given a part to an older female actress. We cast a young, snappy, a child tweener actress to play young Princess Leia. She's like, get the walking carpet out of my way. She's doing all this stuff. And Jimmy Smith is like... He's shaking his head. She just won't. How do you solve a problem like Leia?
I'm with you so far, but I'm sorry. Can we go back a minute?
I mean, you can look around and go, what a beautiful planet. I hope it never gets blown up someday.
Yeah.
You know, if this planet ever got blown up, this is where I'd like to stand.
Oh, my God.
Fast forward.
No, but like, how can she remember her mother who is very beautiful, very sad?
This planet's way better than Tatooine. Sorry, go ahead.
How can she remember her mother who is very beautiful, very sad when her mother literally died like minutes after she was born?
The Force.
What? Is she sure she's not just looking
at pictures?
I'm
amazed that Luke didn't have a shot where she's being, you know, she's riding the robot scoop and her little baby head like turns to the side like Renesmee or whatever and then like sees, you know, Natalie Portman looking beautiful and dead.
And
that's the memory.
No.
Be thankful that he just forgot about that.
Yeah, no kidding. That's awful. Please don't remind me of Renesmee. I don't want to be reminded
of that. I challenge you to figure out how we got here.
We were talking about Alex Kurtzman.
No,
and Picard.
actually technically true.
And Picard.
Video games.
Video
it was a video
games.
Game story. It was it was Ubisoft being bought. Kurtzman's Creed. Well, you've brought up Natalie Portman, so let's talk about the Thor Love and Thunder trailer.
Mm-hmm.
They call it a teaser, but you know how it works.
Yeah.
What'd you think about it?
Honestly, my favorite part, it's fine. My favorite part was Peter Quill talking to the Guardians and like Thor getting into his vision.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part.
I think we need to stick Chris like, Pratt in all these movies.
No, I'm not saying that, but like I like Thor just pissing him off. That's what I like.
I guess. Like how, where are we at on Thor? Because I get that it's not, actually this isn't true. I've watched 110 episodes of an anime where the main character is the dumbest person in the cast.
Yeah.
And yet her antics are just endlessly entertaining.
But yeah.
I get that we can't have Thor be the fish out of water who's like, thee thou this forever. But like, which is it? Is he savvy or does he not know what's going on? Because I refuse to believe that he has enough presence of mind and like self-awareness of horning into a situation that he can do these jokes, you know, when he's doing this stuff. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But like, is that his thing? Is he that guy?
I don't think, you know, he's not Guardians in on the joke.
End of Endgame? No, he is though.
No, he's not.
Oh, you think that he's just doing the whole thing? So when Peter Quill is like, yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of the leader, but the strongest person should be the leader. And he's like, right, but we're all very strong. I'm the leader. He's like, the strongest. You know, like when he's you think that he really doesn't get what he's doing? He gets what he's doing.
Well, I don't think he gets that he's pissing him
it's
off.
It's written like he gets what he's doing.
Yeah, I guess.
It's written like he's Ryan Reynolds. Which makes sense.
Okay.
Because it's Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
Usually writing or at least rewriting some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Or are you mad that he's skinny now? That was never not going to happen, right?
I don't know how I feel
some
about
people are
that.
Mad that he's skinny now. I mean, he's not skinny. He's huge. But
well, I know what you mean. I'm not entirely sure that all of that was handled as well as it could have been. I think that, you know, it was important that we saw Thor go through a depression, and that was a big part of his character and just dealing with, you know, the loss of, still really dealing with the loss of his mother, but then dealing with the loss of his father and all of that, and just kind of not really knowing where his place is in the world anymore. I think that was very important. I think that was fine that he, you know, he gained weight. But I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know if, like, okay, I laughed too, but like, is Fat Thor, is that funny? Should we be laughing at that? I don't know. I don't have a huge problem with him losing weight again because, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of how he deals with stuff. So I'm okay with that.
Okay. I don't know what your answer is. I'll tell you mine. I don't know. Well, I'll tell you what. Because it was tied to a change of status quo for the character,
mm-hmm.
just story-wise, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about people's feelings, not because I don't care. I'm just thinking about in terms of the story and the character. He will have a return to normalcy, right?
Yeah.
In fact, the entire, because he is a character who has been stripped of everything, not just his horned helmet, but like his entire family, his girlfriend, his homeland, his brother. He is literally a person who has no choice but to get into yoga, you know, farmers markets, and like find a new, he's kind of reaching like God middle age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it makes sense for him to do it. You know, there's a kind of funny visual of him using the demon's chains to do CrossFit.
Right,
and stuff like that.
Right.
Like I don't
have a problem with it.
I'm not stung by it, by some people are. I'm empathetic to people who are. I just think that like, it's obvious that the character is, the whole point is that they're trying to return to what their thing is. Now, if we had more plus size superheroes,
yeah,
we would have more representation, and you know, this wouldn't be a thing. This would just be mm-hmm. a character who is kind of one way, was thrown out of what their life is normally like, and they want to be another way. And then it's also not fair because they're just an immortal god that can lift cars, and so
right.
how long are they going to be, you know, overweight or whatever if they don't want to be?
But right.
I think, I don't know. I understand, and I appreciate that, you know, we need to be more even-handed about it. And see more characters that aren't like, you know, we're talking about Marvel films here.
Yeah,
you know,
that aren't
but
buff.
Aren't like the optimized body's quote unquote optimized body size.
Right.
But I think for Thor is a weird character to try and put that on.
I would agree because he is a god.
Although he is the one character that they did something like that with before. So yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a mess. Here's what shouldn't happen. I think we can continue to talk about this and enjoy this movie if it's good without that being the main thing.
I agree too. Cool that we see Natalie Portman.
Well,
see,
you're bringing up something that happens at the end of the trailer.
I know.
For 3 seconds.
That's what I was going to complain about. Is that we barely see it and people are losing their minds it. I've seen a lot of people be like, oh my god, this is so hot, and stuff like that, and she's so hot. Like, I'm so turned on right now. Whoa. And stuff like that, and like, oh, Lady Thor and blah 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 and all this stuff. I'm like, really? We just see her, like, she's not even moving really. I mean, we just kind of see her with a, she's kind of posing, you
talking
know
about Queen Amidala.
That's good. That's really good. I just would have liked to, like, if you're going to throw it in, I mean, I knew it was in there. It wasn't a surprise to me. Like, let's see some action with it. Give me something more to get excited about.
So you have to craft a story in a trailer, and the story they crafted was Thor is getting back on his groove, and then record scratch, there's a Lady Thor.
Yeah.
That's a good trailer story. Hopefully she will be in the movie a lot more.
Yeah.
And it will be mostly about her, but we don't know. So look behind you. She's wearing rubber arms. Those aren't real, right?
I don't know, man. Real.
You would have seen her they have to go to events all the time. There's a picture circulating the internet where she's on set and she's like, boom! She's got like gorilla arms.
That looks so
she's got that character in Last of Us 2 arms, which, hey, you know, cool, but I don't think that's
it. Looks unrealistic. It looks photoshopped or something.
There are a lot of different angles and she's holding them in a weird way. That's why I think
that's what weirds me out.
That's why I think that they're not real. Not that she didn't do a lot of work. Why would her arms look like that, but her legs would look like just like, you know, regular Natalie Portman legs, skip leg day. And then you see her coming from the gym from Just Jared. This is so dumb. I hate this, but I just want to get this out because I saw a YouTube video where they were burning a guy alive and they put rubber arms on him, which is apparently something they do.
A guy alive.
It was a stunt thing.
Yeah.
And they didn't look great, but they did look like arms.
Yes.
And so if you had Marvel money, you could probably just create, you know, like a, that was a face replacement. What's a movie that did fake muscles? Probably like a Bedazzled,
I have no idea.
Didn't Brandon Fraser have like big, well, he had big real muscles too. Anyway, you can do that kind of stuff.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see the movie to like, try to analyze it.
Why don't you tell me what kind of story you'd want to talk about?
I told you my opinion about it. My opinion is show me more. I'm not going to, like, go in and be like, oh, those are totally rubber arms. Yeah. I'm going to agree with you. She's walking weird. She's holding her arms weird.
She's walking wavy.
Yeah. I don't know, though.
Well, just to punish you, we're going to go back to video game stories. Here's... Mika's had a kind of rough day today. So here's the deal.
You don't need to share that with
them. Here's the deal. share your professionalism with the audience and tell me what you think about the fact that Amy Hennig is going to make a Star Wars game. Now, I'll tell you who that is, and then you can tell me how you feel. Okay. Amy Hennig is one of the architects of the Uncharted series, one of the most successful and profitable video game franchises of all time.
Sure.
And I guess the movie probably made money, but you don't think they're going to do another one, do you?
Another movie? I don't think so.
Hey, it's Nate Drake. Get in the car.
I feel that's a movie that like came out and then like I didn't really hear a whole lot of people talking about it. Yeah. So I kind of doubt that they will do another one of those. Okay. Is it going to be like a Star Wars Uncharted game or is that just like her resume?
Narrative-driven blockbuster action adventure game.
Okay, I mean, yeah, that works for Star Wars. I mean, the game that you played...
Fallen Order.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
So
that was Respawn.
Yeah.
Ubisoft is also working on a Star Wars game.
Okay.
So Assassin's Jedi. And Quantic Dream is working on one as well.
Okay.
So 6 billion Force Emotions.
I mean, here's the thing. Are all of them going to be good? Probably not. But like some of them
will. No, all of them will not be good.
Some of them will hopefully be good. And look, I think you can do a lot with Star Wars, but it kind of depends on like how creative you're going to be, I think.
Well, Star Wars games used to be made by LucasArts,
uh-huh.
who was the pinnacle, the height of creativity in terms of what you were doing. It's a quote-unquote shooter, or it's a plane game
right.
simulator, but where does it go from there?
Right.
And LucasArts was, they were the kings and queens of that.
Well, and I think, honestly, for a Star Wars game, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I feel like having a good, strong backstory is just as important as having good mechanics. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting to do something that doesn't quite follow, this is just my personal opinion, doesn't quite follow, you know, like that, you know, exactly like this is what happens in the movies. Let's do something different. The world is so diverse, but we don't really see that. And a lot of the additional media, I feel like, that Star Wars related, you know.
It's not diverse.
No, I'm saying it is.
Are you telling me that when the two black characters in Star Wars find a third black character, that character turns out to be the daughter of one of those characters? That there's not enough diversity in Star Wars?
Well,
how
yeah.
big is this galaxy?
Well, right, there's that. But I was talking, like let's not have it all focused completely on the Jedi is what I was thinking.
Well,
but
good news, bad news. Oh. I just got the Skywalker Saga, the new Lego game for PS5.
Yeah.
And there's an opening montage, which is well slick and well produced, like a lot of Traveler's Tales games. But it's basically like a little montage of scenes. I don't think they're actually scenes, but like scenes set in the 9 different films.
Uh-huh.
And 7 different films. No, 9. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. 9
different
films.
There's 9, yeah.
And each one of them involves a lightsaber somehow.
Oh my God. Yeah. Each one.
So, bad news. Good yeah. news is they all resolve into like a group shot of all the characters from the 9 different films posing, you know, at the title screen. And there's a thing where Finn is like jumps in and he jumps into Rose Tico's arms.
Ah!
But then they both look at each other and he jumps out of her arms. And then lands next to Poe, and they put their arms around each other.
What are you and then trying Rose Tico's to like, say?
I'm alone. Yay.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Well, she knew that when she got into it. No, she absolutely did not know that when she got into it. But they,
what are they trying to say? Like,
they're trying to say that they're fan can they're headcanoning. What's their couple name?
Oh, Poe and I don't know what their head can.
Poe and Finpoe.
Finpoe or whatever. I mean, that's Finpo. Fine. What? Why did the Rose Tico thing though? Like, why do that?
Why put her in it at all?
Oh, that makes me sad too. Poor Rose. I feel bad for Rose.
I feel bad for Kelly Marie Tran.
Yeah, me too.
I do not feel bad for Rose.
Okay,
she's a terribly underwritten character
that's
who,
that's
by
true.
Design. Never got anything to do, you know?
Yes.
Oh, fans hate her? Drop her from the 9th movie.
Why nice. Not give her something to do yeah. in the 9th
movie? Why not have her be the traitor?
Yeah,
doesn't right. make any sense, but no. it gives her an arc.
Yeah.
Why right. not have her be, you know, the lady takes her helmet off and it's, oh my God, it's not Carrie Russell, it's Kelly Marie Tran.
Yeah, right. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. They didn't do anything interesting.
No, they didn't. And that might be true of that game. Review coming in the future.
Okay.
Did you know that It Takes Two, the video game It Takes Two, is getting a movie adaptation produced by The Rock?
What? Is it going to be animated?
Great question. It's going to be at Amazon. It's going to be Amazonated.
Okay.
And it is developed by the studio who's doing Sonic the Hedgehog 2. So, no, I believe it's going to be live action.
Well, but like Sonic
they're also developing
is
several other video game derived projects, including the Tomb Raider anime for Netflix. Maybe
is
not.
Is that still happening?
Maybe not. Live action TV series based on Life is Strange, which I want to throw up. But honestly, that will probably do pretty well. That's probably a good idea.
I'm not familiar with that game.
Life is Strange?
I don't think so.
Hella, Bay is Bay.
You're speaking another language.
I don't want to explain the world to you. Well, I thought I was going to outsource this explaining. It's a game created by a French-Canadian studio where the teenage kids talk like 40-year-old men trying to sound like teenage kids. It features a lesbian love story. A girl can look at photographs and go back in time to when they were taken.
Okay.
But I think she has to be in the photograph. How does that work? It doesn't matter. And she's like a, you know, a quote unquote straight girl who's just trying to make it through high school. And then there's the bad girl. She's a bad dude.
Oh,
and she's
great.
Got blue hair and they have a romance and it's all about flipping the bird to the man. Dude, hella tight.
Okay.
People love it.
All right.
It is surprising you don't know about it. Do you know about Disco Elysium? That'll never get made.
Didn't you
that
play
TV
that?
TV show will never get made. And a Sleeping Dogs movie, which honestly, if Shang-Chi needs something on downtime from the next Shang-Chi movie, he would probably be pretty good in that.
Okay. I don't know that one either.
But do you think about the Book of Love starring in the It Takes Two movie?
Is the Book of Love problematic in It Takes Two?
You just have him. You complete the circle by having Antonio Banderas voice him. And then there it was never racist.
Okay.
Even though that is not a Hispanic actor doing that voice.
Yeah, right.
In that game.
Right.
That is not that.
No.
So let's cast it right now. Jack Quaid and... Do we need more star power than that?
I don't know.
Emma Stone's busy. Not going to be able to get her. Who does The Rock know? Maybe Florence Pugh. Florence Pugh.
Sure.
He's doing The Rock a favor because he gave her a start. And then I'm going to say, Jack Quaid, maybe not old enough.
Is Florence Pugh old enough?
They're young parents.
They're
young parents. That's part of the problem. They got pregnant
young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the kid and newcomer?
In case anybody doesn't know, It Takes Two is a game. It's a co-op game where parents are going to get a divorce. The daughter wishes, you know, Freaky Friday that they wouldn't. And they become, their souls inhabit these two dolls that she has. And then they must make their way through hazards and sort of like puzzles to...
And work together.
And work together. And it better not end with them not getting divorced. No, just one knot. Right? It should be about like learning to accept these big changes in our life. Not, hey kids, wish on your dolls and your parents won't get divorced. Bad.
It'll probably end with them not getting divorced, don't you think?
The Rock's version will.
Okay.
That's enough video game news for you?
That's enough.
I have so much more.
But we won't
do it. How about some bad news?
Okay.
Robert Morris, star of, well, you'd remember him from Mad Men. He was also a movie, TV, and Broadway star. I think he got his start in the original production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Is that correct? Yeah. Has passed away at the age of 90.
Well, that's sad to hear. Who did he play on Mad Men?
Sterling Cooper. Burt Cooper.
Why can't I?
He's the guy that made everybody take their shoes off.
Oh, yeah.
He had like the Rothkos and, you know, he liked to collect art. And
yes,
like that.
Yes. He was very eccentric. That's too bad.
Well, here's where we go. 90. That's a good one.
Yeah, I know. I was trying not to do that.
This is one of those where it's like, if you quizzed me, like, I don't know if I would have thought that he was alive. Probably would have thought that he had already left us. But I'm glad that he had not left us when I thought he had and had such an amazing career.
Yeah. It feels like Mad Men wasn't that long ago, but I know that it was longer ago than I realized, so.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was definitely a while ago. Let's talk about somebody else who's had an amazing career that is probably now over.
Uh-oh. That's not a good start.
And that person is Ezra Miller, who has been arrested for assault in Hawaii. Now you go, okay, so what does this have to do? Nope, this is a new thing. This is all new. So let's go through the whole thing.
I know.
He was singing karaoke in a bar.
They were.
They were It doesn't say that on his police report, I guarantee. They were singing karaoke in a bar, somehow got into an altercation with somebody and was thrown out. I can't remember if there was an arrest. No, there wasn't an arrest, I don't think. Or maybe there was. Then apparently the next day, they, Ezra Miller, broke into like the hotel room of the couple that they got in a fight with.
Oh my God.
And caused trouble. And then I think was arrested. And then a restraining order was issued.
Yeah.
That was in March, late March.
Yeah.
Now they have been arrested for another thing. They got irate at a party and threw a chair at a woman. They like to victimize women, it seems like.
Well, and like it like
cut, the woman,
cut her forehead.
The woman refused treatment for the injury. So clearly it's not that bad. I'm not trying to say it wasn't, you know, that this is an acceptable act. But if a cut is either, you know, a scratch, or a cut is an Anne Boleyn. And this seems, the person's like, okay, I'm fine. So, not great. I mean, I guess, can we just get all the court dates and put them into one? You know, they're a busy person. So.
I know.
What's going on?
I want to know.
If you're DC, you're like, where's that eject button? Whatever your name was, hedge fund manager, because maybe we need to lose $400 million
and
on
it's
this
like,
deal.
And it's like, are we just really good at selecting actors who are problematic in some ways?
Or are
we just problematic the way we run things?
Oh,
is
a lot
DC.
Of pronoun confusion.
Yes,
in this one.
Sorry.
Warner Brothers Films is we. Because if you mean we, the answer is yes.
Uh-huh.
Because the first episode of the show, episode one, actually episode A, it was called, was How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Ezra Miller.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where we tried to convince ourselves that we liked this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Then a couple years ago, that is, you and I, went, seems like somebody should talk about the fact that he choked a woman on video.
That seems weird.
Nobody did anything.
No.
Then he won an Oscar for entering the Speed Force. And now he's going to win probation for entering jail.
And now everybody is like, we need to talk about Ezra Miller. And it's like, a while ago we needed to talk about Ezra Miller.
Yeah,
and
we've been telling you so for a while.
And
what does Ray Fisher have to say about this?
I think maybe Ray Fisher is smart enough to be like, this is none of my business. My sympathy, my empathy goes out to Ezra, but I'm just gonna zip. I don't know. Maybe not. But I worry about Ezra's mental health, and like, I feel like I'm concerned. Like, is there anybody in Ezra's life who can, you know, who is able to talk to them and be like, hey, what's going on? Because to me, this just sounds like this is a mental health crisis happening. This is, you know, sometimes called like a cry for help. We are acting out in a way that we know is in some way is not acceptable because of something. I don't know what, but something is happening. Something is going on. Something isn't right. And obviously they need help somehow. And my heart goes out to them, and I just hope that they get the help that they need.
Thank you for that. That's great. That's our pull quote right there.
Yeah. Well,
I don't care. I want to say that
you stopped there. Okay.
Yeah. I want to say that I disagree with you.
Oh, okay.
I don't care.
Why don't you care?
Because what you just said was a little virtue signaling, but definitely applies to people who are suffering and have no resources. It does not apply to this person. This person I have empathy, but I don't have sympathy for them. And they have a lot of money, and
they have
a lot of people around them who hopefully by this point, although with the toxicity of the Warner Brothers sort of franchise, we know is possibly not there at the levels that it should be, have people who can say, look, man, you like your job, right? You want to keep doing it?
Yeah.
We need to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it happened to Ben Affleck. It's happened to other people.
Yeah,
so I do not feel very bad for this person. I think they need to get their shit together. And, you know, when people do things like this, mm-hmm. they endanger the jobs of hundreds of people.
No, you're absolutely below them. Right.
Because if this Flashpoint thing, and at this point, speaking of points, Warner Brothers has a decision to make. Do they go forward with this film with a felon, alleged, you know, at the helm of it, appearing in two different roles in it, at least? Do you go forward? How do you replace somebody if you're going to replace them? They can do all kinds of things now. Get Tig Notaro to be the Flash. I would be there in a second. But you probably just spike the whole thing. And if you spike the whole thing, everybody under the line doesn't get, you know, their bonuses. They don't get paid or whatever. And so, get your shit together.
I know. I say switch them to Grant Gustin. Just say, oh, something happened with a Flashpoint.
At least you got the name right. Yes. Here's a name that you'll always get right. Brie Larson, who's joining the cast of Fast and Furious 10, which will not be called Fur Tennis like I want it to be.
that's too much for these films.
Fast X, which is boring. Thumbs down.
Well, that just seems like them, though, right? Wasn't he in like Triple X or whatever? So this is like Fast X.
He doesn't want to. Yeah,
he probably
doesn't
want.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah, right. Good for them.
Question.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, my, I wish I was going to say, which I just thought was kind of mean, so I decided not to, but I'm going to say, does anybody want this? That was going to be my take.
Look.
Who asked for this?
Full disclosure, not a fan.
No.
But let's be honest, not a draw.
Somebody thinks she is.
Well, she is when she's in a Marvel movie, but so is a guy from Fresh Off the Boat that we've never heard, or Kim's Convenience that we've never heard of.
Yeah.
Fresh Off the Boat, too. He's in a thing, too.
Yeah.
not a draw. Nobody's lining up to shop at the Unicorn Store. Not diverse. Do we need to add another white person to this thing?
Well, that's true.
Is she going to be a good guy or a bad guy? Because if she's going to be a bad guy, you're going to add another white lady to the bad
team?
That's
a bad guy. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Merely for cachet and for who we thought we could get.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is like, yeah, we're adding another luminary to our list of amazing, you know, Helen Mirren's been in these things. But I don't know, man. Is it like Alex Kurtzman having a successful Showtime show? It's like, if you are Brie Larson, your Oscar is going to get you in to places like the Unicorn Store. Probably made that before she won the Oscar. Or no, she got to make that because of the Oscar.
I mean, I think it is going to open a lot of doors for you, right? I mean, you just...
No, Roberto Benigni is in everything. That guy will not go away.
I don't know. She's in popular stuff. What do you want me to say? I'm not excited about this either. I'm worried that I'm going to say something I'm going to regret.
Go for it.
So I just don't know why anybody would be excited about this. She's just going to be, this is supposed to be a fun, fast moving series where people do dumb things with cars. It's basically superheroes with cars. I think you've said before, and that's what it is. So we're going to have somebody who is not very emotional, you know, doesn't really show a whole lot on their face, and they're not going to be super excited about these cars because we're not going to be able to tell. I mean, what?
Jean Dujardin? We can't get rid of this guy. He's everywhere.
Okay, you know what? Shush.
Who even won this year?
Who did win this year?
So Coda. Forgettable. No, for actress. Jessica Chastain. All right.
Yeah.
Well, foot directly in mouth on that one.
Yeah, they're not going to get Jessica Chastain for the Fast and the Furious.
Well deserved. Why not?
Why would she want to do that?
Everybody's got to do crap. And then, of course, Will Smith. We all tried to forget the Oscars as quick as possible, didn't we?
Yes.
We should probably try to forget the news as quick as we can. But first, a story that will not be over soon.
Oh, gosh.
What do you think about... Get your virtue signaling ready. Let's talk about what's going on in Florida.
What is going on in Florida? Oh, God. I'm just... Are we surprised by anything that Florida does at this point?
No. So Disney has it's kind of a long story, but Disney has essentially its own taxed district.
In what, Orlando.
Yes. Yeah. In for Disney World and for, it's like its own. This was like, so first of all, this is, okay. I do not think that Disney is the good guy in this. I just think that they are the least bad guy.
I understand.
But Walt made a lot of backdoor deals to do what he did and create Disney World. And his idea was, is he wanted to have like almost a sovereign nation, or at least a city of its own.
Mm-hmm.
It would have its own sort of tax code. They would handle their own sanitation and utilities and all this stuff. And they get tax breaks for taking care of all that stuff themselves.
Sure.
I think is the way it goes.
Okay.
Well, because they essentially have spoken against the Don't Say Gay bill that Governor Ron DeSantis has put into place.
Do we need to explain that at all to listeners?
Do we have to?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Look it up. It's homophobic legislation by fat-faced governor of Florida. Mm-hmm. He has rammed through, or at least written a... I don't know what the legislation is, if it's an executive order or if he's rammed it through his legislation, but he has basically like killed their tax status and returned the management of their area to the state.
Yeah.
Which hurts them somehow, but will probably end up costing taxpayers of Florida millions and millions, if not billions of dollars, because they now must foot the bill for all the water, all the power, everything that makes all the rides and everything at Disney go, which is something that Disney handled previously.
I just think this is a stupid, petty move by DeSantis.
Oh, yeah, that's an understatement.
Yeah, and he...
Self-destructive is probably more descriptive.
Yeah, he is terrible.
Too poor. How about...
Atrocious?
Shit-caked.
Okay.
His soul is shit-caked.
Yeah, he's...
There's your show art.
He's pretty freaking awful. This bill...
Petty, too.
Very petty.
Yeah.
Incredibly petty. Like, oh, yeah?
He's a little piss baby.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He's like, screw you, Disney. I took your little tax break away.
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, like lots of on-camera examples of, like...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, look, like Disney, like pushed by a lot of people who support Disney, a lot of customers and everything, was like, no, we're going to put our foot down and say we do not support the Don't Say Gay bill, which they had to do.
Well, it's cool when they've got after administrative power, because if they didn't, they would just be canceling. I'm sorry. Boycotting Disney.
Yeah, right.
That's what they'd be doing. But partially because of that, although they never really worry about getting caught in any moral contradiction.
Mm-mm.
But because they do have legislative power, 0.04% of the voters' legislative power, they're just going to do this instead.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right. Good luck.
It doesn't make me happy. I don't know what would make me happy in this instance. I just like, there's so many other horrible things going on in this world. Like, why are we focusing all of, it just makes me mad. It makes me so mad that kids can't.
I'd like to see some churches, you know, they'd have to be, you know, non-evangelical churches. Also speak out against it, and then watch him try to like remove their tax exempt status because they are, you know, churches can, as long as they remain non-political, can do it.
Oh.
Whereas in the meantime, I'm sure there's plenty of churches that are speaking out in support of Don't Say Gay. That's kind of political, huh? Then we can get some Supreme Court
cases.
But then
if we get political.
Oh, wait. No. Checkmate.
Yeah, right.
Let's retreat into a fantasy world.
Oh my God.
That's the only world worth living in anymore.
That's not Disney. Yeah.
Do you know it's true that Qantas, the airline, the Australian airline, has never crashed. Never had a fatal crash.
Really?
Not totally 100% true.
Oh.
In fact, you have to go back to 1951 to find a fan. Now, when we're combing through 1951 flight records, that's pretty safe.
Yeah, that is. They're still around?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly because, I don't know, how do takeovers, when did all the takeovers happen? Late 90s, early 2000s?
I think so.
That's when all the consolidation happened?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, apparently, you know, the airline industry does a good job.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about it? It is the safest way to travel. You hate being charged too much. You hate only having one bag. You hate that the guy next to you is taking his shoes off. But, like, a lot of this stuff is, I don't know why I'm going to bat for the airline industry. but I'm just saying, to move millions of people every day from place to place and have very few, if no, accidents, you know, or incidents every day. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
But Qantas is an Australian airline who has continued to operate, probably because they're in Australia and service Australia exclusively. Yeah,
right.
Even in 2021, they were named like one of the safest airlines by something something.
Well, that's impressive.
Now, this doesn't mean they haven't had incidents, you know,
sure.
times when there was something was shaky or, you know, an engine went out or something like that. But yeah, very, very safe.
Well, that's cool.
If I was an autistic savant.
Yes.
And I was looking for an airline to fly on, I'd probably pick Qantas Air.
Yeah, that's not really going to help you.
Qantas Air. Good day.
When you're in the U.S., though.
No. You want to take a flight to Melbourne.
Sure.
You're all set to go.
Well, that's true. But not within the continental U.S. So it's not going to help you.
No.
So.
No. They should expand.
They should. Right. And then maybe their record won't be so good.
Or at least, or have, like, do charge for seminars. Like, you know, send your, I mean, like, your... Delta, why would you ask Qantas for help?
Probably
Qantas
wouldn't.
Has not had any incidents, so they're doing something right.
Yeah,
there must be
to
shop
there.
Talk, right?
Oh, sure.
It's so funny that it's, I don't know anything about the airlines. Somebody does. But I feel like that's not super rare. And even people who travel a lot probably know the best time to board.
Oh, sure.
Where the best lounges or restaurants are in the airports, but they don't know a lot about the day-to-day workings.
Right.
Utilities.
Uh-huh.
What else? All these things that are hiding in plain sight that we use every day seem like the things that we know the least about.
Yeah,
whereas
right
now, I could talk for 3 hours about Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, sure.
One of the most useless things to know. Maybe there's something of a savant in me.
Yeah, maybe.
As well.
Maybe.
I see myself in the main character. I said it of this film, Raymond. The film is Rain Man.
Yes.
Starring Dustin Hoffman, billed above Mr. Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Because it's
1988.
Mm-hmm. What happens in Rain Man?
So Rain Man is about a wheeler and dealer. what is Tom Cruise's character's name?
Oh, he only says it about
Charlie,
15 times. Charlie Babbitt.
And he is some sort of like used car. What does he do?
Yeah,
Luxury car importer. And, you know, fast talker and everything. And his he's dating. I don't know if they started dating before or after she started working for him. Anyways, doesn't matter. He's dating one of his coworkers. They're going away for a weekend. She's his girlfriend. And then he finds out that his dad died. And so their weekend plans are done. They have to go deal with that. And we find out that he did not have a very good relationship with his father.
Right.
And he doesn't get very much in the will. And his dad, with his estate after all the taxes and everything, has like about $3 million, which is, it's still a lot today, but I imagine even more in 1988 money.
Not bad, but for this wheeler dealer, it's exactly what he needs to save his company, which is, you know, high investment, high reward.
Yes.
He's having trouble moving some of these cars. There's something of a commentary in the idea that, you know, they're luxury foreign cars, but they don't meet the new EPA standards for air quality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a big deal. We don't harp on that a lot, but he definitely doesn't care. And he's ready to lie and say that they're fine just so he can move these things out because he wants the money. So he is unconcerned about this sort of thing.
Yes.
He's selfish.
He's not a nice guy. He's not even great.
A barely constrained tornado of rage.
Yes.
Like many Tom Cruise characters at this time.
And even his girlfriend is like, can we have a conversation like on their way to their weekend trip? Like she and he's like gets mad at her because she wants to have a conversation.
No, he's a big man with big thinking.
Yeah, right. And
he's
it's like
thinking about stuff.
Calm the freak down, man. Anyways, there is a benefactor who is getting this $3 million and Charlie can't just let this go, so he does some investigating and he finds out that it's somebody living at this home. I think it's called Willbrook, and he goes there and he talks to the doctor, and the doctor's like, I can't tell you, blah blah blah.
Yeah, the money has been left in a trust to this guy.
Yeah. And while they are there, Charlie from his dad, he got this really nice car, and there's a lot of emotions tied up.
6 billion emotions.
Yes, tied up with him and his dad on this car. So his dad, that's like one of the two things his dad bequeaths to him. And there's this guy who's talking to his girlfriend in the car, and he's like, oh yeah, I you know, dad lets me drive it down the driveway. I'm a really good driver. I'm an excellent driver. And she's like, oh, okay. And like he just like gets in, and she's like, Charlie's like, who the hell is this guy? She's like, I don't know. He seems to know this car. And so then he's like, what? And then the doctor comes out and he's like, this is your brother. This is Raymond. And Charlie's like, I'm sorry, what? And at this point is still pissed. So he's trying to learn more. But apparently he had this brother that he never really knew that he had. And at the beginning of the movie, he basically ends up kidnapping him because he feels like, oh, I'm going to kind of hold him and then like get half of the money, which I am owed.
Yeah. Raymond's an adult.
Yeah.
He is voluntarily staying at Wellbrook facility.
Yes.
So there would be legal questions of like consent and competency.
Yes.
But he's like, it's not exactly kidnapping.
Right, because he goes willingly.
It's just two adults going off somewhere together.
Yeah. Right.
But it's pretty questionable.
Yeah, and so then they go on this road trip.
And then the call that he makes to the doctor, which is like, give me the money, you can have him back. It's like, okay, so kidnapping and extortion. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's not great, but a lot of other things happen along the way along this road trip. And he has to get back to LA at a certain time to try to save his company. So he's worried about that. Raymond has all these things that he's very particular about. There's TV shows at certain times he has to watch. There's foods that he has to eat at a certain time. There's a certain time he has to go to bed. He has a schedule that he is on, and if it is broken or if, you know, things get too loud or like, you know, I don't know, say we're going on an airplane, he's going to have, you know, he's not going to be too happy. But along the way, the relationship changes and he grows to really care about his brother and he grows to have a really good connection with him. And that's really what the movie is about.
Wow. You can
also they go to Vegas and count cards. I mean, I think that's what people know about this movie.
Yeah, I guess. Well, because of the hangover.
Yeah. And he's like, well, that's what I feel like I knew that before. I thought that was going to be a bigger part of the movie, actually. I think I knew that before I even saw Hangover. But Raymond is really good with numbers. So yeah. That's like his gift.
Yeah.
When
we sat down to watch a film about an autistic character.
Yes.
A non-neurotypical character in 1988.
Yeah.
A film that, probably for better and for worse, brought a lot of attention to.
I think so.
To spectrum disorders. I was like, oh boy, get ready to hear the R word a lot. And I was, in the first act, disappointed that I was not disappointed. But because it is a story about a family member of this person, you know, dealing with their frustrations, growing closer and at least understanding that they won't understand all the time, this character, but learning to care about them and love them anyway. Mm-hmm. It that fell away, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, it makes your back stand up to hear stuff like that.
It does.
But you understand that it's part of this character's journey. This character who should not be, oh boy, run, Valerie Iglino. Don't have a kid with this man.
Yeah.
He's going to beat the shit out of that kid.
Oh my gosh.
this character is like, Tom Cruise plays these characters sometimes who are just like, whatever it is, their ambition, they want to be a fighter pilot, they want to be a cocktail pourer or something like that.
Right.
But they're just like one little thing and they're like,
I know.
And like those were the worst parts of his performance. But that being said, this is a pretty good performance from Tom Cruise.
I was thinking the same thing, and I was thinking, going off of piggybacking off of that, I feel like he didn't do a lot of the things that we have come to now see in a Tom Cruise performance.
I know you'll get this because you're an actress. He's listening. He listens.
Yeah.
And he has to by just the design of the story and the script, you know. But he's even listening when he's not listening. The character's not listening to this brother who needs, you know, his attention. But as an actor, he is listening. And he's in the scene. And he's not present. Just doing, you know, the Tom Cruise thing.
Yeah. And I feel like I only saw him do a little bit when they were like, when they were like at the casino and they were winning.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, then that's, he's like, that's when I, yes, yes. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a very good performance by Tom Cruise and of course by Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, who hated working on the film.
Dustin Hoffman did?
I don't think he hated the film. He just thought, like, I don't think that this is working. Like, he did the homework. Like, he studied to do the role. This, there's a couple different, like, takes, a couple different people that this is based on. There's a character who, or a real person called Kim Peek, who was an autistic guy who was a savant, and he actually, like, traveled around, I think, before and after this. And there's a couple documentaries based on him, and the character was kind of based on him. And he was a guy who was like, he was the guy that could tell you what he was eating, you know, on the morning of 1967, August 1st or something like that. He had runny eggs or whatever.
Right.
There's another character called Bill Sachter, who's from St. Paul, who was also the subject of the documentaries, and he was diagnosed as subnormal very early on.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
It's going to make Minnesota look really bad.
Yeah.
And he was put in a home, but he basically like was discovered by this documentary filmmaker, and they sort of profiled him, and Mickey Rooney actually played him in a movie called Bill.
Oh, okay.
Bill is... Bill was a movie that was on TV a lot when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah? Is it a good movie?
It's fun.
It's fine. Okay.
And then also, apparently, Hoffman also based his performance on Leslie Lemke, who was an autistic musician.
Okay.
Who was a guy who was, I think he was blind, but he could play the piano. He could play like any instrument and just, you know, pick it up and just play by ear.
Cool.
Just play anything that you, you know, asked him to play. And he was a pianist, a concert pianist and stuff
like
that.
Okay.
So yeah, so like all these are all together, but like Dustin Hoffman's like, I'm doing the thing and I'm going like, oh, no, definitely, definitely. He's like, I don't know if this is working at all. Like he had to be convinced to kind of stay on the film because he just didn't think it was going to work.
I think
which
it
is
works.
Like nuts because it works great.
I think and it really works.
And it's what I like about it is it's it's Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
He's basically just playing his character from Dick Tracy. But he's he recycled that for Mumbles. but he's doing it and you believe it.
Yes.
And there's only a couple times that it gets movie-ish, you know. I doubt that any person who Michael Caine. Michael Caine really liked the movie and he really liked Tom Cruise's performance because apparently Michael Caine had a Rain Man situation in his own life.
Really?
Where for years he had no idea that he had had a brother that he didn't know about.
Oh, no.
And that brother had been Michael committed when Michael was very young to a institution because of severe epilepsy.
Oh.
And so he had never known about that until later in life he discovered this brother. But I doubt that any person who's, you know, has a family member who is like a, you know, level three, like a high level autistic person has a moment where it's like, wait a minute, you're the Rain Man, or wait, Hot Water Burned Baby. Oh, I understand. You know that it gets a little movie-esque.
Well, they had to have it in there, but I did like the reveal though. I agree with you, like, but it was like they felt like they wanted the audience to know that.
Yeah.
And but I do like the reveal though that his what he thought was his imaginary friend was actually his older brother. It was just heartbreaking.
Right.
Who
burned baby with hot water, and so he had to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Like I just
yeah.
Think
that,
I like,
mean that part maybe we don't.
The
need
reality
that.
Is that you're not. You know, when you can care for and love these people, but they're not going to return that love in the way that you are accustomed to recognizing it.
Mm.
And that is frustrating. And sure. The point is it's not about you.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying, could Raymond have more of a life than his baseball cards and like and Judge Wapner? I don't know, but you're taking him away from that.
I know.
And he's happy there, and that's his life. And it isn't about you, and it's literally about him because he wants the money in this, but that's the problem I think that a lot of family members of people have to realize is that it's like, you're not going to be satisfied, and that's okay. You don't have to be satisfied. And I think that comes through.
I think so,
too. And you always have the Hollywood moment where at the climactic moment at the end, that autistic character does make eye contact with you, you know, or lets you hug them. And that isn't necessarily going to happen in real life. But there are enough other parts in the movie where Tom Cruise is just like, I just don't understand why you have to act like this.
Right.
You know, and I'm just trying to tell you to get in the car and he won't get in the car. And like, it's heartbreaking to watch those scenes because we like Raymond immediately
he's so likable
and Tom Cruise seems like such an asshole in the entire film, but you can think about it from Tom Cruise's perspective a little bit and be like, yeah, why won't this guy just get in the car?
I do think Tom Cruise is more likable by the end. I do feel like he's changed. Do I think he would be a great dad? I don't know. I think maybe therapy is in store for Charlie would be good.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I like the end scene where the doctor, the director of the facility, this is before the hearing, right? This isn't even the hearing because they want a hearing to see whether he can stay with Tom Cruise or not.
Yeah.
And they go in and then there's another psychologist and they're talking to Raymond, but it's basically they're kind of evaluating Charlie because Charlie is showing passion, but he's showing no patience and no understanding of the situation.
Mm.
And they have to prove to Charlie that Raymond doesn't really get it. Like, he might want to stay with you, but he doesn't understand what this means.
The difference.
And they do the thing with, you want to stay with Charlie? Definitely, definitely. You want to go back home? Definitely, definitely. So do you want to stay with Charlie or go back home? Yeah, stay with Charlie and go back home. And it's like, okay, see, he doesn't understand. And it's important for you, Tom Cruise, to get this. Because no matter what happens, we're going to take care of Raymond, but you need to get that. You just wanting this is not enough to make this work.
Because it has to be what's best for Raymond. I think that does finally come.
And I'm not sure that the movie totally proves. Here's another movie thing.
Mm.
Raymond just doesn't understand how toaster ovens work, I guess. So he just puts his waffles box and all in the toaster oven. It's like, all right. But I mean, the guy's like, I get that he knows baseball stats and he maybe doesn't know how a toaster oven works, but... You know, that's the nail in the coffin for him staying with Charlie.
I know. I was a little bit like, okay,
stick
right.
to Cheetos cheese balls. Man, I miss Cheetos cheese balls.
Yeah. And I was also thinking, what are they going to do, in movie when Raymond finds out that there are no more Cheetos cheese balls?
Yeah.
That is
when Doug Llewellyn dies. Oh boy, we're in trouble.
That he try explaining that to him. I don't want Cheetos. I want the cheese balls. No, well, this is all I have. I don't care. I don't want that. That is not going to go over well. Here was what I was thinking, but I know that's not really. This isn't really what's important. And maybe Charlie will come to this conclusion on his own. I know he has his own life in LA, and for now he's just gonna go visit Raymond when he can.
Right.
And that's fine. But if he really does want to be closer to his brother, not that he wants to do this, but if his brother is happy where he is, he could move to Cincinnati and, you know, start a life there. I mean, it seems like his business is kind of done for the time being, by the end of the movie.
Yeah, and we don't really get into that.
That's not really important.
He's a young man. He can start over.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a possibility, and then that could be great. And I think the thing that really upsets me, and this is maybe, I'm upset for both Charlie and for Raymond, is that Charlie is so upset with the doctor and his dad. Like, mm-hmm. he didn't know he had a brother.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't anybody tell me? It would have been nice. There's a line that's like, it would have been nice to have known him more than these just past six days.
Yeah. And it's mashed up and mingled well with his self-serving need to get this money or a part of this money, because
mm-hmm.
they can exist at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely wants what he feels like his father owes him of his estate, but also he is shocked, and as a man who, you know, was estranged from his father, feels the need to have a family connection.
Yeah.
And he plays both, and both can exist. And we don't need a scene where we break down one and we break down the other. Like, he does what he does, and it's self-serving. But under that is this current of like, this is all I have left of my family, you know? His father probably, you know, his father never let him drive the car. And his father probably resented Tom Cruise
mm-hmm.
for, you know, being burned by the hot water.
Yeah.
You know, our minds do funny things. Like, right. You wouldn't blame Raymond for that, because Raymond couldn't be responsible for that. But you would probably resent Tom Cruise, not only for, we don't know how the mother died, I guess, but like, so he probably, the father was putting that on him. But the movie doesn't like have a scene where, you know, the psychiatrist goes, Raymond, go watch TV for a little bit. And then we break down, like, what's going on with Charlie?
No.
Like, that's left for you to go, that would totally be something that is in Charlie's mind and is behind a lot of his anger.
Well, and maybe, I don't know, maybe his father was always kind of cold, but maybe he became cold when his wife died, and then he had to put one of his children he felt like he had no choice
mm-hmm.
to put one of his children into an institution. Now, why he didn't make more of an effort
rich, like, just get like a live-in caregiver or something like
well,
that.
Well, seriously, like, I know, clearly you need another pair of
hands.
It was
the 60s.
I know, but like, you know, it's just heartbreaking that why make the choice that your sons aren't going to be a part of each other's lives at all?
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, it's going to be traumatic for Charlie to bring him to this place. Why? Why would it be traumatic? And Raymond can leave the facility, it sounds like, for like up to 3 hours at a time. So if that's it, then you go pick Raymond up, you go do something fun, and then you drop Raymond off.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it was insurmountable, but he just was kind of sounded like an emotionally distant person. So I don't know. It's just, it's upsetting. And but it makes sense that the thrust of this movie is really, it's really about their relationship.
Yeah.
And them kind of getting to know each other and that sort of thing.
The road movie is a versatile vehicle, so to speak, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You can really put anything into a road movie, can't you?
Yeah, you really can. And I was thinking, too, there's a lot of scenes in phone booths in this movie.
Yeah, a cell phone would totally, Zoom would wreck this movie.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise has got to get back to LA because he's got to do some business deals, and it's like, you do them telepresence, this movie's
right.
over.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And the cell phone would just wreck it too. I mean, even in the opening, he had like a phone car.
Phone car?
Yeah, he had.
Get in.
Oh. He had a phone
car
in
phone.
His car, a
yes.
car phone.
Yeah.
Wow, I said that weird. But, you know, then he didn't have that car anymore when he was in Cincinnati. So that just, you know, take that out and add more obstacles. And we have that great scene. Well, a couple great scenes with the phone booth. One where I don't even know if he even told Raymond to stay in the car. I don't think he necessarily did, but he was pissed at him. But he had to go talk about something. So he just left Raymond in the car in this small town.
Right.
And then we see in the reflection of the phone booth, Raymond get out of the car. I mean, I knew that was going to happen, but that was just great cinematography. That was great storytelling just with, you know, the visual. And then like later, because he knows he can't leave him alone when he gets into the phone booth. We have that great scene where they're both in the phone booth together, and Raymond is kind of not he's not freaking out. He's just like, there is not a lot of room in here. He is not wrong.
Yeah.
And then he's like trying to take his backpack off, and Charlie's trying to talk to whoever is on the phone. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, there's not enough room in here.
Yeah. Why get rid of Valeria Galeno? Why couldn't this be a three-hander? It kind of is for parts of it.
For parts of it, it is. I think we needed to, the way I don't think it was necessary totally, but I think she was pissed at him and she was drawing a line in the sand.
Yeah, that's what happens, but you can do whatever you want.
You can do whatever you want, but I think we needed to, he needed some time alone with his brother to bond with him. And to not, like, blow that off and to, you know, have more of that connection with him.
Yeah.
And
we just assume that they're going to be fine. And who knows? They're, you know, probably in their 20s or whatever. Who knows if they'll even be together in 6 weeks?
Yeah, but who knows?
But, you know, it could bring them closer.
Well, I think he was,
I think it does in a way.
It does in a way.
But there was an emotional element to Raymond's kind of, you know, journey, his awakening, such as it is, that we don't get much access to. And when we do, it's like, why is this here?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, but I like the intention of the scene where she is in the elevator with Raymond.
I know
Raymond.
What you're going to say. Yeah.
Because Raymond, they go to Vegas and they're hitting it big. I also like that it's not, now you would do it like they would win $1 million at the casino.
Yeah.
And then the casino thugs would beat the shit out of Tom Cruise and throw him out and take all his money and they'd be back at zero.
Yeah.
But this is just a situation where he makes the money back and he wants to do more. And the casino's like, you can go. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I guess that train's over, you know. But they win big and they're in the casino bar and a pro, like, you know, grabs on to Raymond and says that she wants to, like, go dancing with him, and then gets kind of scared away because he's Raymond. He's a little weird. And so he wants to go down and meet her at the bar at 10 because that's when she said she'd be there. Of course, she's not there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Charlie goes off and does something else. And I can't remember the character's name, but Valeria is there with him. And she sees that he's disappointed. And
it's Susanna or something like that.
Yeah. And what she wants to do is, like, she sees how disappointed that he is. And she knows how little experience he's had, you know, emotionally with women. And so she wants to give him the experience he missed. And so she dances with him a little bit and she gives him a kiss.
Yeah.
Something that, like, that's kind of what she can provide for him.
Right.
And I like the idea of that, but she's barely in the film and we're almost at the end of this thing and the main character's girlfriend comes back and starts making out with his brother and you're like,
why is this happening?
It's kind of weird.
Well, I think you could have had, like, the same intention, like, without the kiss and it wouldn't have been as weird. You know, like, just like just dancing with her.
Yeah. Plus, it's a replication of them dancing.
Yeah.
Which is a great scene.
It is a great scene.
When Charlie's teaching him to dance.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a great scene. So, yeah, I thought that, like, them kissing was, it just wasn't necessary. But, and it's a little weird.
It's great.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I just think that it could have been, if she had been a bigger part of the movie, we would understand that side of, you know, because Charlie's figuring his own thing out.
Yeah.
And he's mad all the time. And you have another character who is maybe doing the same thing, trying to reach him emotionally, Raymond.
Yeah.
And can at least provide that, but mm-hmm. also realizes, you know, at the end that Raymond's got to do his own thing.
Yeah. It looks nice when they have matching suits. They get, like, nice suits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, and Tom Cruise teaches them that Kmart sucks. Because there was that great scene where he's like, Tom Cruise is like, I gave you a pair of my underwear this morning. What was wrong with that? He's like, I have it in my pocket. It's not, and then he's explaining why this is not, it's not his underwear, but it's not just that. It's like a completely different type of underwear than he's comfortable wearing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not comfortable for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's explaining it in his own ways and he's saying, I get underwear from, and he lists this specific location in Cincinnati, which is a Kmart.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh. And Tom Cruise cannot, that's when we get one of his explosions because he cannot take it because he's like, you can get underwear anywhere. I don't understand.
Right.
But Raymond doesn't understand that.
Right. And so, if you ask Tom Cruise to like wear, here, wear this banana hammock. Would he want to wear that?
No, of course not.
Yeah. And that came from Fredericks of Hollywood. Yeah, there's another like kind of movie-ish moment or just movie-ish idea is like, so when he gets nervous, he recites the who's on first thing to himself. And
yeah,
there's this scene where Charlie's like, you're never going to figure it out. It's not a riddle. And it's like, that's not why he's doing it. And like, it's okay that like Charlie doesn't understand that, but I feel like the movie is sort of also takes it as like, Raymond thinks that there is an answer to who is on first.
Well, they make it seem
and
that
it doesn't
way.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
Because like earlier on, they're driving in the car and he hears a bumper on the radio station and he's just like, ooh, 98.7, bow, today is rock. Or whatever. He just keeps saying that to himself.
Yeah, because it sounds cool.
Yeah, that's just how it works.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Whatever. But he gets him a VHS of Abbott and Costello at the end. So that's fun.
Yeah, that is fun. And they watch it together. And he's like, it's a joke. It's a joke. And then they're by the end of the movie, they're joking around with each other, you know. And the syrup has to be on the table before the pancakes arrive. Otherwise, it's just not going to be a good experience.
Raymond, like what you like, but if the syrup's on the table, I guarantee it's not pure maple syrup.
Thank you. Would Raymond's life change forever if he had pure maple syrup?
If he has to have shock therapy to get it through to him.
Oh, no. No. Come on.
Like what you like, Raymond. But you might like pure maple syrup if you give it a try.
Yeah. What is he going to do when, what is the Judge Wampner? Like, I think I've seen that before. But, like, that's going to go off the air. Would he be okay with Judge Judy or somebody else?
Maybe we could get him. So Judge Wampner went off the air in the early 90s, but he lived until I died recently, I think.
Okay.
But we got to get him onto a Judge Judy.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That'd probably be okay.
Yeah, gotta start him off easy so that, like, he can, you know. And I do like that he...
Although in 1998, he went to Judge Wapner's animal court.
Oh my gosh.
So we'll see how he likes that.
Oh my gosh. I did like that Charlie got Raymond the tiny portable TV.
Yeah.
That should have done that like from the beginning, you know, like that's a great investment. So then
maybe that's what killed his credit card.
Maybe.
I feel like we don't try. I believe that a guy with a nice suit and who drives, a Beamer as a daily driver and imports foreign cars can afford to, you know, take a cross-country road trip.
Right.
And buy things along the way. But at one point, you know, his credit card is declined and you're like, you think that a movie watcher goes, ooh, something, did somebody turn it off? You know, what's going on here?
Right.
And it's more just, no, you know, he's not liquid. A lot of his money's tied up in the cars and the fees and the import taxes and all these things. But it's like, all right, but he can also buy what's probably a $300 Sony Watchman, you know, in 1988, just so his brother can watch TV on the road.
I know.
Which never works.
Oh, really? Like the signal?
Yeah.
Okay.
You leave the area of,
oh, that
of
makes
the TV
sense.
Signal.
Yeah,
so you're
it did have an antenna.
Maybe they just stop at 1 o'clock wherever they are. So
well, they would have to.
Yeah,
right. So maybe not as good of an investment, but still a good investment. Then you're stopping at less farmhouses.
Yeah, weird scene.
Weird scene, but
yeah.
That lady
good
was
to see
so
Beth
nice.
Grant,
yeah,
veteran character actress Beth Grant.
Yeah.
The lady that blows up on the bus in Speed.
Oh, great.
Weird scene designed to show us what exactly?
People can be kind. I don't know. Just like her kids getting hooked on Judge Wapner. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Not
showing
entirely sure.
Economic disparity between a wheeler dealer from the West Coast and a lady with five kids watching cartoons in the afternoon.
Yeah, right.
In Nevada or whatever.
Who knows where they were at that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think overall it's a really sweet movie and I do love at the, you know, at the hearing, like Raymond doesn't really like people touching him a whole lot. And we did have that scene earlier where after he teaches them to dance, Charlie tries to give him a hug, but he's too forceful, and Charlie freaks out. But Raymond freaks out. But they have this scene where they kind of like put their foreheads together, and it was just so sweet.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, you know, that was a lot, I think, for Raymond, you know, and that shows a lot of trust on his part and that he really cares about his brother too. And I just thought it was very sweet.
Yeah. Which, you know, may or may not reflect, real life.
But, I know. They were definitely.
But in 6 days, he does learn to trust his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of watching things, would you tell people to watch this film?
Yeah, I would. I would recommend it. I think that overall, I still think it's a really good movie. There are some things that didn't age well, like the R word is used a little bit at the beginning. And then at some point, somebody says something. There are probably some other things. One thing that glaringly stuck out to me was like, a lot of autistic people can't even speak. And I'm like, that is blatantly not true.
Yeah. I mean, so, how severe are we talking here?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
We know a lot more about autism than we did in 1988.
Yeah, although they were kind of going off a checklist maybe, but definitely some hits, you know, just him kind of being obsessed with a kind of regimen or a schedule.
Yes.
And him, you know, stimming in different ways, you know, with the Who's on First thing and like the extreme examples of him, you know, doing a little bit of self-harm. And, you know, these are all.
That's true.
Somebody looked at the literature and, you know, got some things right.
Right. And everything in his room has to be in a particular way. He doesn't like people touching his things.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't like that. with the part where she's kind of looking at his baseball cards and she's like, oh, yeah, cool. Nice. And then she gives him back and he's like, no, got to put him back in order the way this was.
Yeah. This is, oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. Would you recommend this?
Yeah, obviously. Not overrated, I don't think.
I mean,
it won
so either.
8 Oscars.
Yeah.
It won like Best Movie, Best Actor, Screenplay. Did it win Best Director? I don't know. But I mean, like, it won a ton of Oscars, made a bunch of money. It's amazing there's no Rain Man 2. Definitely got.
Probably for the best.
Both Cruise and Hoffman set for the next couple decades of their career. And like we said, there's probably. Oh, of course. Please Stand By, the movie about Dakota Fanning being an autistic Star Trek fan. There's probably much more and better and accurate examples of a story like this.
I'm worried about that.
As far as an early high-budget, big Hollywood example goes, yeah, a success, I think.
Uh-huh. And I think you're right, probably. I mean, I would say for the most part, maybe more positive attention and awareness brought to autism from this film. So. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know what it is. The Rain Man.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, just Rain Man.
Just Rain Man.
yeah, definitely no. Definitely no article. No, definitely
not. Definitely not.
Well, we did it.
We did it.
I, for one, am looking forward to having a new place to create.
Me too.
And to create podcasts for the podcast network we're on, the Just Enough Trope Podcast Network, which can be found on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Just Enough Trope. Check us out there. Follow us. Also, while you're on the internet, go to your listening platform of choice. Give the show a rating and a review. Subscribe to it. Why don't you?
Yeah.
Because that's how the computers that are in charge of us, who have custody of us, know that we're doing a good job. And give us a rating. Let us know how you think we're doing. Give us 5 toothpicks. They're not 4.
No.
There's 4 left in the box.
Yes.
Bonnie Bedelia.
Yeah.
What are you doing in this movie?
Yeah, I know.
1988?
Yeah.
She got big in the next decade, I guess. But yeah. Give us 5.
Yes.
5 stars. We'd appreciate that. We'll be back next week to talk about something else. And until then, we're signing off. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mika Hanna.
Keep the geek fires burning.